Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-Main, no lanes on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-Main, no lanes on the track when we unite.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
I'm all right, man. We're recording this on a... We're going to reveal the gimmick that we're recording early tonight?
Well, I guess I just did. I mean, if we weren't, we kind of have to now. Yeah.
Well, it'd have been weird. People would be trying to communicate with us, and we'd be ignoring them because we usually get some pretty good chat feedback, and they'd be like, these guys are being bigger dickheads than usual by not responding, which also would not be out of character, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're actually recording this on Wednesday night. I did put this in the Patreon, so just in case I didn't advertise this at all. I just threw it in the Patreon just to see if anybody was lurking around the Patreon tonight, they could jump in. But this is Wednesday night, 24 hours early, and the reason why we're recording early is because I'm actually going to be traveling on Thursday. I, as of right now, so what I'm doing is called space available travel. So it's like, you know, we got like these huge cargo planes in the Air Force, and they're going back and forth to all these different bases. Well, they go back and forth to Travis Air Force Base in California, like, you know, 6-7 times a week. So instead of us paying for a flight, we're just going to go try to jump on one of those. The downside is we got to spend all day at the terminal trying to get on one of those flights. But the good side is it's free. So we're going to try to take a free trip home. And go see some family for the holidays, and hopefully we're able to get on a flight. If we can't get on one tomorrow, we'll try again on Friday. But because I'm very likely to be, you know, on the road essentially on Thursday, we're just going to record it on Wednesday, and then we're going to set this video up to premiere at the usual time. Because JD, every time we do a show and it's not on Thursday night at our normal time, our numbers drop significantly. It's incredible. Yeah,
our guys are creatures of habit, and they like us at our normal time, our same bad time on our same bad channels. So, you know, why ruin a good thing? You know, why make people work around our schedule?
Yeah. And, you know, we could actually do the show an hour earlier because of the time difference now. Like, we're closer in time. We're 4 hours. So where I was recording before daylight savings, I was recording at 5:30 p.m. because we were 5 hours difference. Well, now it's only 4 hours difference. I just moved my time up an hour instead of moving you back an hour, because our audience is so accustomed to 10:30 central time recording or watching the show and interacting with us at that time. So we realized we know what you guys want, and you guys want the same every week.
That's what we're going to do. If this is what you guys like, because again, it's always like, you can always tell the weeks that we are off schedule because the numbers just go completely dip. So fuck it, this is what we do, this is what we are.
No, it's all good, and no big deal. We're really excited to be able to record. We tried a couple of times this week, but we're able to do it today. JD, I do want to start the show off, because I gotta be honest, I'm not really happy with the Voices of Wrestling right now, for two reasons. So I listened to their show today, the flagship show. And our bosses, the first thing I heard when I listened was our boss, Joe Lanza, burying It's a Wonderful Life. And
it's
I'm
a wonderful
like,
life. I thought the same thing.
Yeah. I was just like, dude, come on. He just buried Miracle on 34th Street was just slamming Christmas movie after Christmas movie. And I'm like, you know what? If Voices of Wrestling need JD and I to class this, join up a little bit, then that's what we're going to do. We actually recorded a Christmas movie special just last week, and I'm going to release that for everybody, and so everybody can check that out. So if you like It's a Wonderful Life, if you are a person of dignity and great character, and you like It's a Wonderful Life, well, JD and I are the guys for you, because we absolutely love that movie. We talked about it on our latest Christmas special.
Let's be honest. Joe and Rich are not very schmaltzy guys. You and I, yeah, pretty schmaltzy. Let's be yeah, honest. You and I are far more, corny than either of those two guys are. So I wasn't surprised when I heard that. Disappointed, but not surprised.
Yeah. 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 I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. And the other thing, and this really, pissed me off. I'm going to play the clip here in a second, but you know, earlier this week, Scott DeMore, and this is what we'll lead the show off with. Scott DeMore was on Busted Open Radio, and he was kind of touting that he is on the verge of signing one of the biggest signings in TNA. He said, it's going to blow everybody's socks off. It's going to be a big deal. Right. And so I had a little bit of time on Monday. Over the weekend, I did not get to record a Brace for Impact because my schedule was swamped. And to be honest, there wasn't really much to talk about in the world of TNA because they're not producing new content right now. So I had nothing really to cover. And the news items that they had would have had maybe 5 minutes to talk about. But Scott DeMore goes ahead and he feeds us podcasters some news to talk about. Touting this big signing. And so I went on to our Patreon and I recorded a show talking about who I thought it was going to be. Now, I started that show off basically saying that I thought it would be Dolph Ziggler and that Dolph Ziggler would be a little bit of a disappointment. JD, I'll get your comments here in a sec. I said the only person that would not be a disappointed, well, I said two people would not be disappointments. I said Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné, and Kazuchika Okada. And I said neither one are really all that likely. I said Mercedes Moné would probably be the biggest one for TNA to get, the most famous person that they could possibly get that would probably make the to help their company out the most. But she's WWE bound. They ain't got a hope in hell. Well, then Joe Lanza, what a jerk this guy is. Totally shits all over my podcast. Buries everything I had just said. And with this comment from the flagship show, take a listen.
W may have lost their grip on Sasha Banks as well. Impact is touting that they have a big signing to announce in January, and they're touting it as a big one. I would not totally discount Sasha Banks for Impact.
And unbelievable.
The reason I say that, our TNA, I guess we're back to TNA.
Yep. Final Resolution is the final Impact. So, we're TNA.
Right when you get used to saying Impact, now you have to get used to saying TNA again. But as we know, they've made plays. They made plays for Will Ospreay and Punk to whatever degree they made those plays. And they basically have a fistful of money that they're trying to spend on a big free agent.
Yeah. So essentially, they got a fistful of money in there. Go ahead.
No, I'll say I went to the Jamie. BFI chat and just, I said I went to the BFI chat today and I just dropped that and walked away. Like I just said, oh yeah, Voices Wrestling saying that Sasha Banks or Mercedes coming to Impact or TNA. And then I didn't say anything else. And I came back to reading finals. So I didn't even really drop the bomb and like people had like follow ups and I had nothing. And I wouldn't have anything to give to me. I was like, I don't have any secret info. Like, I did a big deal. It was entertaining me today about it.
Yeah. You did really drop a big bombshell. And they were tagging me and they were like, hey, Mike, you're in some of those chats. What do you know, man? And I was just like, dude, I know nothing. So you texted me and you're like, oh, it was just on the flagship. No worries. Go check it out. So I was like, okay. Cause I had not at that point listened to the flagship just yet. And I listened to that. Joe Lanza is not reporting that Sasha Banks is signing with TNA. He's just saying TNA has a fistful of money and they are trying to spend it on somebody. And the biggest possible name that they could spend it on right now would be Mercedes Moné.
100%. And that is the biggest signing they could have right now. Joe also has mentioned stuff about how Mercedes' New Japan run has kind of been a flop, which I was surprised to hear him say until he backed up his words by pulling up the fact she hasn't, like, other than the show in California, it hasn't really drawn much and she's been hurt for most of it. So, maybe maybe it has been. Maybe it is time for her to find some big money. And, like, I think it's funny that you just said, oh, she's going back to WWE. Because that's what Mike always says. Whenever there's a free agent available, anyone who's a free agent, anytime anyone's up for grabs, Mike says, oh, they're definitely going to WWE. He just assumes that anybody in pro wrestling who's not signed to a contract wants to or is on their way to or eventually will be signed by WWE. We've had this show for 2 years, and he has reported that Matt Cardona is going to WWE no less than 6 times. No less than 2 years.
Yeah. I think everybody it's been what FTR, right? That was one. Matt Cardona was one. There's been a lot of people that I've just assumed they were all going back to WWE because, you know, it's historical precedent, right? Everybody ends up going back eventually. So naturally, why would that not be my first assumption that they would be going back to WWE? It only makes sense that that's where they would go. I figured that if I just keep saying it, you know, I'm probably going to be about 75% right. Unfortunately, lately, I have not had a really good batting average with that mentality.
The one guy you didn't say was CM Punk, and that happened.
In fact, I said he would never go back.
No. Yeah. Oh. So apparently, I don't know if you heard this today, too. I guess Sean Ross Sapp reported that Mercedes is asking for more money than Cher just re-signed the biggest contract, women contract in WWE history for. She's asking for significantly more money than that.
I mean, if you can get it, go for it, girl. Money. I mean, you know, like, I'm not going to hate on anybody for trying to get paid. Go get paid. It might not work out, though, and she might end up pricing herself out of a WWE deal, which would then leave her, you know, with TNA and AEW as options. And as it stands right now, it seems like, you know, AEW and Sasha Banks have basically, they're not really talking at this point. And TNA is right there and wants to just blow money on somebody. And why not her? And Joe and Rich brought up the fact that TNA does a lot of short-term deals. Like, a lot of their deals are like 6 months. They're willing to, instead of like forcing someone to come in, or forcing is a strong word, instead of locking someone down for 3 years where they can't do anything other than your promotion, they're like, come in for 6 months, give us a shot for 6 months. And then if you like it, you know, we'll extend your stay, and we'll try to do business going further than that. And then if you don't like it, well, then you can go do something else. And I think that could be an option while Mercedes, you know, Mercedes and Trinity, both, they work together in TNA while they're, you know, checking out the landscape of WWE and then seeing how things shake up there. And then eventually going back to get that big money over there.
Are they going to get the big money over there? And here's where I'm at right now. Everybody goes back. Company's doing better without the two of them than they were when they were there. What's the incentive to re-sign? If I'm Nick Khan, forget about Paul. Paul's a dork. Like, he just wants all his NXT kids back. If you're Nick Khan, who's like the real guy on the company now, why do you want Sasha Banks and Trinity back? Like, what do they have to offer that you can't get from what you have now?
My mentality is that if I'm looking at it purely like taking the emotional context out of it, like, put yourself in a Nick Khan shoes. And I don't think Nick Khan runs this business based off of emotion. It doesn't seem that that's what he does business. Right?
Oh,
yeah. So if you take the emotional context and historical context of what those two ladies meant to WWE and their fans, if you take it based off of, you know, what they're able to draw, you don't bring them back. You just create somebody new. You just build up the next person to take their spot. Say, thank you guys. Go do your thing. We can create new talent. And everybody essentially in that promotion is replaceable, right? We thought John Cena couldn't be replaced. Here comes Roman Reigns, right? And then now Roman Reigns can't be replaced. He only shows up every couple of months. You got Cody and you got Seth Rollins. And you got other guys doing just fine without him. Right? Like, that place is just a machine and it just cranks out stars. So yeah, if I'm the one negotiating the deal for the WWE side, I'm like, no, I don't I'm not giving you that fucking money. Here's what I'll give you. And if you don't like it, go to TNA.
Does it crank out stars? Maybe I'm wrong on this. I would think a star is someone that can bring an audience somewhere else. who has left WWE other than CM Punk? CM Punk has proven to be a star. Who has left WWE and brought an audience with them anywhere? A significant audience.
What?
One that matters. What,
okay. Okay. It depends on your definition of star. What I'm saying is WWE. My star is someone
who fucking mattered. No, my no, I know they right. call everyone super. Everyone who puts on a pair of trunks.
Yeah, I'm just meaning people. What I'm saying is they just crank out people that they could fill their cards out with that they can do well with, no matter what, right? That's those what I'm saying,
stars.
Right?
Those aren't stars. Yeah. Well, they crank out.
Those are people. WWE stars.
No, WWE superstars, which is code for cog in the machine. Because when you leave the nest, you don't fly. Punk is the one guy who immediately made a big difference when he left. Moxley had to basically rebuild himself and became a star again. Bryan Danielson basically, you know, had some, but I mean, it wasn't like Dynamite ratings went crazy for him, and he was a massive star over there, right? And that's the thing about WWE fans is they like WWE. They don't care about, like, our good buddies goes, I just support the people that goes there that are there. No, you don't. You support the machine. Because whenever anybody leaves, the whole fandom acts like they don't matter anymore. And they never did. So I'm just, I disagree with this notion that they crank out stars. Because if LA Knight leaves tomorrow, he's not going to mean shit on the independents again. He's back to Eli Drake.
Yeah, I think you just took it the wrong way. I think I just meant like it doesn't matter. Like they have a next man up mentality, right?
They do have
like
a next man
one
up,
guy though. Goes down, one guy goes down. They're just cranking out the next person. If the word star gets you grinds your gears, I won't use that one. But I just mean like they just got the next talent ready to go. No big deal.
But I don't think. But here's the thing, though. I don't think you're wrong. I think this is. I think that leads into what we're talking about. Sasha Banks. She's asking, or Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné. She's asking for all this money, and it's like, all right, are you worth it? It's not like New Japan went crazy when she was under there, and it doesn't sound like New Japan is at all in a hurry to work with her again. Like, what did she really mean for their bottom line? Not a lot. Not what Chris Jericho meant, and they paid her a lot of money. So I mean, Moné. So I don't. I push back on this idea that they create stars. They create very strong sprockets that keep that machine humming.
Yeah. And so for TNA, I think the inevitable answer is going to be, will she be worth the money that they're going to have to dish out to get her? I don't know that we'll ever know the answer to that question because, A, I don't know that we'll ever know how much she gets paid, and, B, I don't know that how we'll ever know how much she's bringing in, right? Like we'll never know the true definition of that answer. I think the short answer is probably not, but they need a big splash if they're going to get any kind of attention. And I think they're willing to take a loss on this to just, you know, just to attract some other free agents to come over there because they've been, you know, like, look, if they'd have brought Will Ospreay over and they paid him $1 million a year, they were never getting that money back. They were, you know what I mean? As great as he is, they were never getting that money back. You know what I mean? And if they do the same thing for Sasha, they're never getting that money back. I think they're just trying to get themselves in the fucking game and just trying to attract new free agents and just trying to make some kind of noise. And I applaud it. I don't know if in a business sense it's ever going to work, but you got to take some chances if you're ever going to, you know, improve your stock in this business.
I agree with 100% of what you said. 100%. Two thoughts. One, I don't think TNA has ever seen a return on anyone they've ever brought in. Right, because this is not a company that's designed to draw. It never has been, right? Like, think about it. These were they hired TV stars. They never went on tour. They never sold tickets. They never sold pay-per-views. So they've never, I don't think they've ever gotten a return on investment for a particular star that they've ever signed. Maybe Kurt Angle, but I mean, even then it probably took a long time. Like, I don't think I'm crazy of saying that. And I agree with you. They do need to make a splash because, but at the same time, I was told TNA has all this buzz, Mike. I was told that TNA is so buzz right now. There's so much buzz about this TNA return. There's just tons and tons of buzz. Tons of buzz. That they got less than 700 tickets sold for a big comeback show. Tons of buzz. Tons. Tons of buzz. Tons.
Yeah, they have people interested, but it depends on your definition of buzz. Yeah, they do. They do. They have their people. The TNA fans are really interested, and people outside of TNA are talking about it. Did that translate into ticket sales? Of course not. No, we haven't seen the
evidence. That's not a buzz. And there's no buzz.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
Buzz isn't a real
but
thing.
You're arguing semantics again. You're focused on the word star and your definition of the word star. And now you're focused on the word buzz. And the reason why you're focused on it is because some dickhead, an absolute dickhead, posted a tweet. This guy has no followers, but he posted a tweet saying that TNA had more buzz than AEW, and the gall of this cocksucker to do that. He cannot, like, he should not be able to say stuff like that because it's just not true. He has no evidence to back it
up.
He just said that because
I have this problem about people talking shit out of their ass. It bothers me. It drives me crazy when people just say things and have absolutely no ground to stand on when they say it. I've got this thing about lying that really drives me crazy. I don't like it. Yeah. I get it worked up when people say stupid shit. It just bugs me. And saying that, like, this company, like, if you cannot sell more than 1,000 tickets for a building, you don't have buzz. You don't. It's not a real thing. And I just hate that. I don't like buzzwords. Like, it just, they don't make it's not real. Like, the reality is this company does need a splash. They do need to bring in a Mercedes Moné. They do need to bring in somebody because they're 0-2 on big free agents, and they're trying to step up to the plate. So they need to. And I think, quite frankly, I think it's going to happen. I think they're going to sign her. And I don't think, because I think it doesn't matter if she brings in return on investment. I think they need the optics right now, which sometimes is more important than the money.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to sign her. I really don't think that she's going back to WWE. I just know this company. I don't think they have what it takes. I just don't think they have what it takes to bring in a star like that. I just don't. And because I've been following them pretty in depth for a long time, and I'm not talking about the Dixie Carter era. Somebody's going to come at me. He's like, well, they signed Sting. They signed Kurt Angle. They signed Christian. Guys, that was Dixie years. Carter. Yeah, that was Dixie Carter. And Dixie Carter had Panda Energy money. This is Scott D'Amore, and he's got Anthem money. Now, Anthem does have money. Anthem don't like to blow their money, right? And everybody always says they're willing to spend if it's important, but when it comes to talent, I have not seen the evidence of that, right? So I need to see a little bit of evidence that that's true. I think this whole fucking thing is just leading to Ziggy Dolphin is what I like to call him, Dolph Ziggler himself. I think Ziggy Dolphin, formerly known as Dolph Ziggler, is going to come in and he's going to show the world that he can have 3.5 star matches. I think that's what this whole thing's about.
Anthem does, like, they got those short arms with those deep pockets. That is true. They got all this money, but they never seem to reach for it. That's a good point. Scott D'Amore. I'm sorry. Scott D'Amore said it's going to shock the wrestling world. If it's Dolph Ziggler, Nick Nemeth, you're not shocking anyone. Like, that doesn't surprise. Well, some TNA fans go, oh, that's pretty cool. They'll probably get a little excited about it, but nobody is shocked. Like, that's a big strikeout. I'm sorry. If that's what it is, that's a huge whiff.
Yeah. You know, and it's one of those things you're over-promising, right, and under-delivering when you should really do the opposite. The only name that makes sense to fit the bill of the hard sell that he did on Busted Open would be Sasha. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just pessimistic, Mike, on this, you know, their ability to be able to get this deal done. Honestly, if they do bring in Sasha, I think they're still bringing in Ziggler. I think that guy's just coming in. No matter what. And I don't think Riddle's coming in, by the way. I don't think he's gone.
He's court guy. Seems like court got him back. He kind of got his one of his big starts with MLW. And it seems like he's going back there. And, you know, court's the problematic wrestler whisperer, right? I think Lance coined that term too. But I mean, like, he does a good job with those guys. So maybe, and again, I think if TNA signs him, there's going to be people in the wrestling media, we all know who, are going to be like super on them. Whereas if Court signs him, it's like, oh, well, just another guy over in MLW. Like, I don't know, man. I think Riddle's headed for MLW. I don't know. Like, I think if Ziggler comes in and they bring him in as a guy, it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to MLW, saying, but no. is he signed or is he going to be there long term? That's the question.
Who knows? Sorry, finish your thought on Ziggler. I'm sorry.
Oh, he sucks. That's my thought on Ziggler. I can't stand the guy. He doesn't care. He admittedly says he doesn't follow pro wrestling, doesn't care. I ranted about him last week. I haven't cared about Dolph Ziggler in over a decade. I don't think you should either. I don't think anybody should. Man, the man doesn't care. Doesn't. So why should why should any of us? Did you hear you hear Okada signed Barry Bloom as his agent?
Well, Sean Russap poured some cold water on that. Saying that deal is nowhere near. He said it's nowhere near official yet. So, super JCast hinted at it. Other people are hinting at it. Nobody's fucking reporting it. Everybody just wants to be vague and hinting at stuff. Nobody wants to report anything. You just want to put eyeball emojis and
big eyes.
And do cryptic tweets like you're the fucking Riddler. Just say what it is, guys. God damn it.
We're fucking worked up tonight, man.
I know, man. But yeah, so and then you know a lot of people tweeted that and like, oh, we think it's Barry Bloom. And then Sean Russap said, he goes, he might get Barry Bloom, but that deal is not done yet. So, but if he did get Barry Bloom, I think that he's very likely headed to either AEW or WWE. I don't see him stick around New Japan.
No, you don't hire an American agent if you're going to sign for New Japan. If you're going back to Bushiroad, what happened there?
That's the thing. It's like I think Bushiroad doesn't appear to be doing well right now. You know what I mean? Like stocks down a little bit, you know, and the Japanese, you know, dollar amount, the yen right now is down right now. And so there seems to be some issues there. And if you're Okada and you're 35, 36, you're a little bit beat up, you got some nagging injuries and you saw Nakamura making really good money, you know, in WWE, and he's never been the top guy there, but you know what? Okada's been a top guy for a long time. He might not give a fuck anymore. He's like, now he wants to go. He's like, look, I've been the top guy in a promotion for a long time. I'd like to just go get paid now. And maybe he's wanting to do that. Who knows? And then, or he could go to AEW and still work some Japan, you know, work some Japan dates. And he won't be the top guy in Japan, but he could be, you know, a guy in Japan while still working in the US and making bigger money.
Hey, Kota Ibushi's working the next big Noah show, and he's all elite. Yeah. So yeah. I could honestly, both are a good move for him. If he's grown weird, because that's saying he'll never be a top guy in the US. He just won't.
Yeah.
Like maybe in AEW more than WWE. I mean, he's got to genuflect onto Max like everyone has to if he goes to AEW. But I mean, like maybe you're right. Maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he just wants to cash some checks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and at this point, look, I get it, man. Look, I'm 40, right? And I'm about to hit 20 years in the military. I have some big decisions to make. A big part of me, like my heart, is where my job currently is, and I feel committed to this job, and I've, you know, been all over the world and I've done a great job. But I'd also like to, you know, go get paid. So like I think what I'm doing now, I could probably make a lot more money without the threat of war hanging over my head. Like those thoughts enter your mind. So it's like, Eric, maybe I could just go get paid. You know what I mean? But like, you know, you've been doing this since you were a kid, right? And that's kind of where a lot of people are. Like people like that are in pro wrestling. They don't really, you know, in Japan, the culture is different. They like being attached to a promotion is very much part of their identity, and they don't want to break away from that. And then eventually, once they get older, they start to stick around. Now, I know in the 80s, it's a little bit different. They're going back and forth, but you know, Okada's been there a long time, right? Like, you know, Marufuji never left Noah. Like, and it took a long time for Kenta to leave Noah. Katsuhiko Nakajima just left Noah, and he's what, 36, 37? He's been there since he was a kid. Yeah, so it's like, it's a big deal when people leave their promotion.
Yeah, Nakajima's bounced around. He isn't like Noah for life. Like he spent a good chunk of his career in Noah, but he's done a lot because he's a Kensuke guy. So he just went wherever Kensuke was when he was younger. Now here's the thing: the older generation of Japanese guys, when they got to a certain level, they bounced the promotion and founded their own. You know, as is the case with Giant Baba and Tony Inoki, Shinya Hashimoto did it. Like it. Akira Maeda, like it's happened numerous times, right? It's happened a lot in Japan. So I don't think that he's interested in that, but it's not unprecedented for a guy to be on top for so long in Japan specifically. Because you're right, there is that culture of working for the team and doing this and that. But again, when you're a star, a legit star, and in Japan, Okada's a legitimate star, right? That guy goes somewhere else and people pay attention and go to shows and watch what's going on. Like, it's still much more star-driven business over there.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7 so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it, 0.3-second fingerprint recognition, 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
So if he were to go somewhere else, I think it would be a big deal, but it's not unprecedented, right? Hashimoto had this huge run, and then boom, zero one. Muto was the first, and then boom, here's the keys to all Japan, right? I mean, this happens in Japan. It hasn't in a long time, but that isn't to say it isn't possible for Okada just to go, you know what? I'm going to go do something else. You know, I could see it. I wasn't originally, but I could see it now.
I think 2 weeks ago we were pretty bullish that it wouldn't happen.
Super bullish.
Yeah. But I think the Barry Bloom rumors, and that they're just rumors at this point. No one's actually reported it, as I so angrily stated a minute ago. But I think why we were so bullish is because no top star, and this is what Dave was saying, and no top Japanese star has ever left Japan and went to the States. The closest would have been
never, you
know, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Shinsuke was not the top guy there. He was, you know, below Okada, below Tanahashi at the time. So, so that's really the big thing. And maybe he's a young guy's coming up and be like, you know, maybe I need to get out of their way and I can go do something else for a little bit. Then I can come back and work some, you know, dream matches with them. You know, maybe that's something that he could be doing.
Good. If you let Yoda Tsuji kind of run for a little, like 3-4 years, right on top. Then all of a sudden, the Tokyo Dome, you know, Tsuji wins the title for the third or fourth time. He's holding that belt, and all of a sudden, you hear a coin drop. 50,000 people go nuts in the dome for the first time in years. You know, there is something to that. So here's the thing, too, is like people can't miss you if you never go away. That's something I think we've lost in pro wrestling is people never go away, right? I think that's what made the Cody stuff special when he came back to WWE. Like he came back a new man, right? And it's been invaluable to him.
Yeah. How old is Okada? Was he 35 or 36?
35, 36, something like that. He's not an old guy, he's got a lot of mileage.
Yeah. But if he went and did like a 3-year tour in WWE and then came back to New Japan, dude, like we're talking, as long as he's healthy, we're talking dome sellouts, you know, like different generations coming together. You know, Okada versus Yota Tsuji, Okada versus Shota Umino. You know, Ren Narita. I don't know if Yuya Uemura will ever get there, but you know, maybe one day he'll get there too. But those three guys, I think, could be there in the next 3 years.
They're the new Musketeers. So that's, you know, when New Japan puts that label on someone, they're serious, right?
Yeah.
Like this, they're like, these are our guys. Like they did it with Hashimoto, Muto, and Shono in the 80s or early 90s. They did it with Okada, Tanahashi and Nakamura. Those are the three Musketeers. Yeah. Like when they say that, these are the guys. Those are the guys. So maybe it would be in New Japan's best interest if they're, I don't know, I can't even say it with a straight face. It definitely wouldn't be in New Japan's best interest for Okada to walk away. I'm stopping myself before saying something totally stupid. But it would probably be good for the talent. It'd probably be good for the talent there to kind of grow, because that's what had to happen when Tanahashi kind of took the reins, right? Is we had to do something new. So maybe it's that time. I mean, maybe, I'm sure they don't want it, but it might be bet. I don't know. I can't even say it. I mean, I can see why the talent would want it. I can see that they want their shot.
It wouldn't pay it It wouldn't pay immediate dividends, but I think in the long road it might end up being better because you're gonna be forced to build a whole new crop of talent. And I think they quickly found out that that new crop does not involve Sonata. So they're gonna have to move on from Sonata. And I think Sonata facing Naito in the Tokyo Dome.
Naito at the Dome. I think, and then he'll lose.
Yeah,
he'll lose to Naito, and then I think we get Naito. I think the long play then will be Naito Tsuji, right?
Yeah, because Tsuji is in Los Ingobernables, right? So, So I think that would be the long play. But look, for a couple of guys who don't cover New Japan, I thought we did okay. Although I did say Nakajima was a Noah guy for life, so apparently I don't.
Yeah, I mean, like, everything. I get why you would say that because he's been there a good chunk of his career. But in reality, he's a Kensuke guy. Like he's very loyal to his stepfather, adoptive father. Like I don't know how it works in Japan, how you would call that. But I mean, like, that's basically his dad. And the young part of his career was spent wherever Kensuke was. And then he got to flower and be his own guy. And he's a fucking dickhead who's also currently the All Japan Triple Crown champion. I adore him immensely. He's awesome.
Yeah. He doesn't understand that wrestling is fake.
No, he has no, you know, clue. No one told him it's a work.
So, Nakajima reminds me of an old Mick Foley, like, stand-up bit from Mick Foley's one-man show. He's like, you know, when I was coming up, I would watch a lot of Terry Funk matches, and I'd watch his punches, and they looked so great. He was making contact, and the guys were selling, and his punches looked so great. And finally, I finally got to work with him, and I was going to learn the secret of his punches. And then he just knocked the shit out of me. He goes, wait a minute. The secret is they're just real punches? That's kind of like Nakajima.
Nakajima actually just kicked your face in. Like, yeah. Remember the last year he got in trouble with DDT when they were DDT with Tetsuya Endo. He knocked the fuck out of him, gave him a concussion, like legit. And you look at it, he kicked the shit out of him. Like, that was nasty looking. Like, no, definitely not pulling punches. And the worst part is he kicked him in the head and he was kind of like laughing about it. Like, oh, look at that. I knocked him out. Like, that's the thing, is he's kind of a prick. I love that.
He is. Yeah, he is. He's great. So, Sting, let's talk about Sting because, you know, there's been a knock on Sting throughout his old career that Sting is not a draw because whenever he took over as the WCW champion, business was down. And then he was in TNA all those years and TNA never sold any tickets. And apparently that's all Sting's fault, but they're about to sell out the Greensboro Coliseum for Sting's farewell match. Can everybody just eat shit now about Sting not being a draw, or are they just going to say, oh, it's a one-time deal?
Mike, what was the number one WCW pay-per-view, the top-selling WCW pay-per-view of all time?
WCW, you know, Starrcade 97, Hogan Sting.
That'd be correct. So I don't want to hear that talk because it's negative talk. And I've said this to the cows come home. The WCW booking matters, right? Booking matters. And WCW didn't have a competent booker. Well, probably until Kevin Sullivan, realistically speaking. Like, they couldn't draw. Like, they tripped over their own feet trying to draw stuff. So Sting was like the only like level force in that company for years. He was like the rock that the company was like could like withstand. When everything was down, Sting was always there. And TNA, like I said, TNA was never designed to draw. Like, they ran the Impact Zone. They only like put the show on the road a handful of times. They didn't have the infrastructure to like legitimately run. Right. It just wasn't what people wanted it to be. Right. It was a TV show, and that's what they treated it as. Sting was a player on a TV show who commanded a high salary. Deservedly so. He's Sting.
Yeah. So we're pretty excited about this. I'm really looking forward to his final match. There have not been any rumors as to who it could be, but I'm still thinking Samoa Joe. I know we talked about that a couple weeks ago. But, originally it was Darby, but I don't think they can trust Darby to stay healthy. So I'm thinking Samoa Joe.
Well, Darby's going to go climb Mount Everest and might die. My kid asked today if there's going to be an avalanche, if Darby will try to surf the avalanche because he's been watching like ridiculous movies and stuff like that. And I'm like thinking like, no, he can't do that. But in my head, I'm like, you know, he might try. Like, I could see him like thinking he could do that. So, I don't know if you books it. We're both on the Samoa Joe, like, for the title. We both think that's how Sting should go out. If that's not a possibility, what do you do? in Greensboro.
In Greensboro. I think they're going to want to do a tag match, and I would avoid that. I want to see Sting have his final match, like, for the world championship. That's what I'm thinking. So if we can't get Samoa Joe, you know, we keep hearing that MJF may end up taking some time off because he's got, you know, all these injuries. But the other option, I could see MJF talking his way into that match and defending his title against Sting and beating Sting in Greensboro. I could see him just wanting to do that because he's AEW's top guy. so, of course, he would want to do that. You know, Chris Jericho comes to mind. I know that everybody would want Sting to put over somebody young. Samoa Joe wouldn't fit that bill, but they do have the history. But we've never seen Chris Jericho versus Sting. So I think that would be cool, kind of like a Legends matchup, you know. So people say whatever they want about Chris Jericho. I bet he has a good match with Sting. I bet he does.
I bet Jericho.
And honestly, Sting could win that match too. Like, he didn't have to, like, there's no rule that says you have to lose on your way out. He could beat Jericho.
I think Sting is going to want to lose on his way out.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's just the way his brain operates. And I'll throw one at you. I'd like to see Swerve Strickland.
There you go. Yeah, I could be down with that. Yeah. I think, you know, I have not watched Dynamite yet. It's on my DVR.
It's pretty good.
I'll be watching it. Yeah. Well, I mean, the last month has been awesome. Like, I have not been really keeping up with Collision too much, just matches here and there, but I've been watching every episode of Dynamite, and I would say since they started the tournament, everything's been great. So good on them. But yeah, I think Swerve is, like, out of everybody on AEW, like, Swerve is the only guy that I see that has, like, kind of momentum that's ready to break through some type of ceiling, right? Like, I just see it in him. He is the guy that I feel like can be the next big star for them. And if they want to do it, but here's the problem though, JD, is I think that he does it as a babyface, and I think that I think that, you know, if they booked him against Sting, they'd want him to be the heel. But I think the big money is in Swerve as a babyface.
I get where you're coming from, but he's still a heel right now, which is reinforced on the show tonight. Here's why I think it can work is because with Nana and the embassy, right? Because with Sting right now, let's not forget he's 64. He's not working a traditional main event style match, which is why I question if they're not going to go with Joe, because like I think he needs bells and whistles. And I think with the embassy, with Brian freaking Cage specifically and Darby, and I'm sure you could get some other folks, Hangman involved, I'm sure you could make it a clusterfuck, but because all the clusterfucks that involve Sting in this company have been really good. So I think that if you went with Sting and then Swerve, and then at the end, maybe you could do a little, not like a double turn, but maybe you can get Sting to endorse him a little bit and start pushing into that babyface role for him, for Swerve Strickland. Like, I think if I were them, I would be pushing in that direction right now. I'm going to get a text from John Muse telling me it's a terrible idea in about 36 hours. I'm going to get a text saying, JD, you're dumb. So, and I'm going to laugh about it, but I don't know. That's kind of what I would like to see happen in Greensboro.
I think there's a lot of good options, it's sure. Gonna be really interesting. It's gonna be really interesting either way. I mean, Sting sold the place out, so gonna be a big show. And before we get off here, let's talk about real quick before we get to our last topic, because I think we'll spend a lot of time on our last topic. WWE is refocused on signing a lot of their homegrown stars, or not homegrown, a lot of their stars. Charlotte, Rey Mysterio, that's why I corrected myself, homegrown, Rey Mysterio, and Dominic have all re-signed, and it appears that after the new year, they're going to be focusing on signing some of the other big stars, like, you know, Becky and Seth and Drew McIntyre. But look, you know, at one point we thought the TKO wouldn't be willing to be spending big money to re-sign these people, but it appears that is not the case, because Charlotte has just signed the biggest contract in, you know, women's history for WWE, apparently.
Well, I guess the thing is, like, how does the money get spent? Like, I want to see what TKO does when some of these mid-level contracts come up, right? Do you protect your stars and kind of push out the middle guys? Because you have a bunch of dudes in NXT that can do that job cheap. Better, but cheaper. So I mean, like, I think protecting your stars is smart, right? Protecting your top players, we'll say, is smart. Like, you want to keep, like, and you don't want them to go to free agency because then they're going to be expensive, especially if you want them. And if you have plans for them and they're coming up, you want them locked down. You don't want them testing free agency. Same way Tony Khan locked down the Elite, right? So you don't want, you don't want that. It makes complete sense. I get it. Like, you want to make sure your guns are locked in before they have a chance to test the open market. If I'm a talent, maybe I want to test the open market. I don't know.
Some people like, you know, job security, and which is weird thing for a WWE talent to be like, think that their contract means they have job security, right? They have 90 days worth of security. At any point they can get cut and they have 90 days of pay, right? There are 90-day contracts essentially, but you know, I mean, that could be different under TKO because, you know, UFC has been paying fighters through their contract, so much so that Tony Ferguson, he was a former top UFC star, he just lost his seventh match in a row, so and because he had signed a 6-fight deal before he lost the title fight, he had signed a 6-fight deal, so he's 7 fights in a row he's lost. When back in the day, you would lose three or four fights in a row and you were cut essentially. But now it seems like they're more willing to just pay people out of their contract, even if it's to their own detriment. They should not be allowing a guy to lose 7 times in a row because it's, you know, brain damage. But
yeah. Yeah, that's a lot. So yeah, and you get for four, you'd be like, hey, maybe I need to reconsider this. You know, I don't know. It's interesting to me to see how, because we still don't know what TKO means for that company, right? We're still kind of learning. I think they're still kind of learning. Like, I think they're kind of trying to figure things out as they go. Can they lock down all these free agents to big money deals? Matt says maybe not. I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting next. I think the next 6 months are going to be very, very interesting. Both companies. Maybe all three, to be honest with you. We'll see what Scott Moore pulls out of his ass. All three could be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, can they? I mean, WWE has unlimited resources. Will they? That's the bigger thing. Like, will the bosses at the top allow that stuff to happen? I think your Beckys and Charlottes and Seth Rollins and Drews, I think they'll probably stay put. But, you know, guys like Sheamus, it's like, hey, man, we love you. You're a great guy, but we're not going to give you a single dollar over what we were paying you, you know, the last, you know, 20 years, right? I think we start seeing guys like that drop off. Kind of like Ziggler, right? Like, I put Sheamus and Ziggler in the same category. Like, fair. Former world champions, never really drawn, had some good matches, can produce whenever called upon, but never really going to be somebody that a company is dependent on, right? Just good guys to have around, and I think that Sheamus fits that same bill with Ziggler.
Yeah, I can't argue that one bit. I just wonder how it shakes out, man. Like, it's going to be interesting to see. Are they going to stay in hoarding mode? Like, you can't just like have all this talent under contract. Like, you've got these guys in NXT that you need to eventually work in. We start working in the Creeds, you know, Dragon Lee was up. I guess now he's back down. Like, you're going to have to start processing guys through. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how thick the roster stays over the next year.
Yeah, we'll see. And it really depends on this new TV deal that Raw is going to be getting. And speaking of which, WBD and Paramount. It was the news broke today. I can't remember who broke it, but the WBD, Warner Brothers Discovery, and Paramount have opened discussions about a possible merger, man. We were always thinking that it was going to be Universal. How did Paramount enter into all this?
Because I think Universal shot it down. Like, because you got to look at this. Because, like, I did a little research before we got on the show. Since 2022, like, basically since the Discovery Warner Media merger happened, Zaslav has been looking for another company to get in bed with from jump. There was talk of Comcast. That was the big rumors. Comcast was going to merge them. And I came on the show and said, I don't know if the government's going to allow that because of just how massive Comcast is. And then there was talk that they were going to sell Warner Brothers to Universal, right? So they were looking about getting rid of assets. Now the talk is, oh, we're going to merge with Paramount. And having done some research on the subject, the problem with that from a regulatory standpoint is the sheer amount of debt that this new company would acquire. Like, Warner Media is $35 billion in debt. Paramount is $15 billion. You're talking $60 billion of debt. And you could sort of say, well, it's not real. It's not real. I mean, you can, yeah, I wouldn't argue that, but there's like, and again, these are people smarter than me. They're saying, so I'm just parroting this stuff. They're saying that the government might not let that one fly. Just be mainly, again, Paramount's a much smaller company than Comcast is. But again, they're saying that because of that, the sheer massive amount of debt, it might not pop. All I know is Zaslav definitely wants a partner in all this.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this whole thing is going to be wild if it even happens, if the government even allows it, which I think that would be a really tough thing, because Paramount is the product of a merger that just happened a couple of years ago. Like CBS and Viacom merged, and like, you know, all the CBS networks, which, you know, your CBS proper, CBS Sports and Pop TV and all them. And then you had your Viacom networks, which I believe were Showtime, the Paramount Network, MTV and VH1 and all those networks. That then becomes a big conglomeration. And now what they've done is now they're cutting out Showtime altogether. Showtime's dead. Like they had Showtime Boxing and Bellator, and they cut out their whole sports division. Well, now they're just cutting out the entire Showtime division. It's all going to go Paramount Plus, and I think you'd be able to access, like, there's going to be a Paramount Plus channel on your cable provider. So that whole thing's just going away as they go to cut costs, and that has got them entering into merger talks with another company who just merged with another company. So, like, I just don't see how the government would even allow it to happen. They would have to then probably sell off a bunch of their assets to these other conglomerations to make sure that they don't get too big, which could be a whole, you know, issue in and of itself, kind of like the, you know, Fox selling off all those assets over to Disney, right? They had to do something similar because they didn't want Disney to get too big, because Disney bought, you know, FX and those networks, and now Disney just bought Hulu.
Yeah, Disney picked up, well, Disney was a partial owner in Hulu. When Hulu started, it was owned by CBS, ABC, Disney, or CBS, Disney, and Comcast. Comcast being NBC. So it was, Hulu was supposed to be the television answer to Netflix. And then everybody got super greedy, and they all have this stake in Hulu. And Disney finally just bought out the shares of Hulu. So now it's all theirs. It was a quarter theirs for a long time. Now it's all theirs. Because again, they acquired Fox's shares. They bought 20th Century Fox. That's what Disney did. Fox spun off the Fox Corp, like News Corp. Right, the Fox conglomeration spun off its entertainment wing, like 20th Century Fox, essentially, and sold that to Disney. Now that's what Zaslav had talked about doing too. So if the government, or if they get wind, again, we've heard these merger talks before when it comes to WBD. So we got to wait this out. Like, and that's a long time. That's a long, long time before that. The precedent of that being Sinclair and Tribune Media would have been a massive, massive deal. The Trump administration said no to that one. So if the Trump administration says no, that gets too big, I can't see a Biden administration or whatever happens in the next election term. I can't see that happening. But I could absolutely see Zaslav spinning off Warner Brothers. I could see him spinning off all this other stuff that he has purchased and just like pushing out DC, pushing out Warner, you know, in the Turner, maybe they sell the Turner stuff, right? I mean, any of that stuff could be sold. I don't know. I don't know where this goes. Like, part of me is like, why did you merge with all this if you really didn't want it to begin with? Like, all you did was accrue a ton of debt and pissed a lot of people off and made a shit ton of bad decisions. Zaslav sucks.
Yeah. It's like, what was the goal? Like, what did Warner Brothers have that Discovery really wanted? Right. Like,
Warner Brothers.
Yeah, but yeah, Warner Brothers. But was it the movies? Was it TNT, TBS? Was it CNN? It couldn't have been CNN. CNN's a money pit, right? So, like, I just don't know what it actually was.
Well, that's the thing is, ever since the merger, the WBD merger, like, that hasn't done well. The stock market has not treated this merger well. Similar does not love the TKO merger, right? It has not loved Endeavor in this. Like, some of these public companies are finding these mergers, and then they're finding, like, the big-time buyer's remorse after this. And Zaslav's on going into year three of this. And this is why he keeps looking to unload it, man. $35 billion is a lot of billions, right? It's a lot. As a CEO, you're supposed to, like, control. And let's be honest, the streaming wars have puttered out. They've puttered out. It's all been a failure. It's all been a failure, right? Everyone's losing money. Disney is working, and Netflix is still, even losing everything, everything they had, Netflix is still like the big dog in the streaming platform. And nobody else catches them. Everybody thought they could compete. Everybody thought this would be like cable part two. And the pandemic rushed it before it was really ready. And now everyone's like, oh shit, this isn't working. We're billions of debt. And people say, oh, billions of debt, it doesn't matter. But it's still billions of debt. And this is where we are. I don't know, man. It's not great.
No, no. And I wonder how this merger, these merger talks, if they would affect the pro wrestling media rights. That is curious to me. I mean, it could, because who's going to be the big boss in that relationship? I would assume it'd be WBD. But I mean, CBS is nothing to stub your nose at, right? Like CBS is big time, and the Paramount people totally got rid of all combat sports. Like they shit canned Bellator, they shit canned boxing. They have Combate Global on their on Paramount Plus, but nobody watches it. Nobody knows it's there. I think it's like almost free content for them to put on their station or to put on their app. They want nothing to do with it. And when TNA left Paramount and these new people took over, they wanted nothing to do with pro wrestling ever again. So I'm curious to see how that works out.
It all depends on the corporate culture takes over, right? And you have these deals like that's. It could be why they're looking at acquiring WWE, right? Because you're trying to look, we have this other property associated with us, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out where we stand with all this. And it could just be, there's a lot that goes on. And these big billionaire types, like they have their hands in a lot of pots. So sometimes you just, you know, your right hand's in one pot, your left hand's in another, and two don't have anything to do with each other. Right. Those are completely mm-hmm. separate things. And sometimes one feeds the other. You just never know in which case this is. And I don't know how a potential WWE deal could affect a merger. I'm still not sold on the fact of a merger being possible. Right. Yeah. You got to look at the merger as something that can happen years down the line, because that's what it would take. It would take a couple of years to get that done. Whereas this potential WWE deal and a potential AEW renewal are things you have to worry about tomorrow. So I don't know, man. It's interesting, and I don't have a clear-cut answer on what I think about it. Like, I don't know. It's hard to know what Zaslav's going to do. He's kind of unpredictable.
Yeah, he's definitely a wild card. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. We'll as news comes out, we'll be sure to cover it here and to talk more about it here, because I do find that to be incredibly interesting. But hey guys, I think that's going to do it for us this week. Head over to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. We got an overtime coming out for you. I did a Brace for Impact. I did 30 minutes just talking news. There's nothing really to cover. But if it comes out that that somebody has signed, there's a big deal happening, there's news breaking, I'll just pull out my cell phone and I'll just knock something out for everybody and upload it to Patreon. Because I'll be on the road the next couple of weeks. JD and I will figure out what's going on with the show. We'll figure that out next week. But if I have to call in, we'll do that. We'll see how all that works out. But content will not stop. We'll still be doing content. It might just be a little bit different than what you guys are used to. So, but yeah, that's gonna do it for us, everybody. JD, JD, talk about before we go, talk about Gaijin. You've been uploading chapters of Gaijin. How's that going? And what chapter are we on? And when are we going to get some more content?
We took a pause because I had to get my finals done for my school this week. By the way, straight A's this semester. Very proud of myself.
Nice.
And
nice.
I had to get the kids' finals. Like the last 2 weeks are kind of crazy in the holiday. So I'm going to upload. I believe we're on chapter 7. I got to double check that. I believe we're on chapter 7. I'm going to upload 5 chapters on Friday. So we'll kind of catch everybody up from what they missed. If you've been missing out, go on the Patreon and it's all there for you to read. I'm very happy with this book. Like I said, I took a picture of my bookshelf at home and I said, you know what? It's time to add another book to this. And I've got one ready to go. I'm just letting it go to you guys first before we do the Kickstarter next in 2024. I want it to go to you guys. I want you to tell me what you think. So give it a read, man. That'll be the next 5 chapters will be on Friday and we'll go from there.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks everybody. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A man, no rain. From the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A man, no rain. From the track when we.
Hola, hola, my name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Nos vemos por ahí.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.